The winner of more awards than any editorial writer in Albany Times Union's history, Jim McGrath, was both an Albany institution and a keen observer of the world beyond his beloved adopted city. When he died in 2013 at the age of 56, the newspaper lost a writer who combined a passionate advocacy for society's most vulnerable people with a scathing disregard for the elite whose actions created an underclass in the United States. His editorials and commentaries charted many of the most critical issues in New York and the country: the death penalty, civil liberties, gay rights, historic presidential campaigns, the economy, terrorism, and much more, all with an incisiveness that remains relevant, if not more so, in the present political era. A new book of Jim McGrath's work is out, entitled I'll Be Home. The book is edited by Jim's widow, Daryl McGrath, who's an Albany journalist and the author of Flight Paths, a field journal of hope, heartbreak, and miracles with New York's bird people, and Howard Healy, a copy editor and proofreader for the New York State Bar Association, who retired as editorial page editor of the Times Union in 2008. It is a great pleasure to welcome Daryl and Howard to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
What a great pleasure to have you both on the program. The new book, I'll Be Home, The Writings of Jim McGrath, is out now from Excelsior Editions, and it's a beautiful, beautiful book. So tell us, Daryl, of when this started to become a project for you, of something that you thought you wanted to do.
I first had the idea to do a collection of Jim's writings probably within a year of his death. Initially, I thought it would be something I would do privately, maybe get it bound as a little spiral-bound volume at a print shop and just give it to close family and friends. At around the same time, SUNY Press published my first book, and I approached them about this idea, and it sort of took off. I had a great deal of work to do on Flight Paths still. That didn't come out until 2016. So I started thinking about this, but I would say it was 2.5 years ago probably that Howard and I really got to working steadily on it, got a contract for the book, and we knew it would be a SUNY Press edition.
And you knew you wanted Howard in on the process?
Yes, initially, and he will never take enough credit for this. I've known Howard for more than 20 years. I knew him when I worked at the Times Union, and he was Jim's editor. And initially, I was going back to him so many times and saying, Howard, do you remember what piece Jim wrote on this topic or that topic? And we kept meeting. And finally, I said, Howard, I want you in as a co-editor. And he actually was too bashful about that. And I said, if you don't agree, I'm putting your name on the cover anyhow. I needed his help.
So the book, the way it is set up, I find fascinating because you have there are introductions to various pieces and then the pieces themselves. But there are introductions, but really very little context is needed often in these pieces, which is interesting to me.
Yes and no. We just collected past writings of Jim and let the reader kind of go through the book without any kind of guidance, I think that would have diminished it somewhat. I think the introductions set the stage for how Jim approached Albany or politics or sports or whatever, and I think it added to the book.
Absolutely.
Or, as Jim would have said, set the scene when he was saying how you start writing something. The one thing we did do was we had to go back on a number of these unresolved issues, which at the time they were published were still, you know, active cases or unresolved political issues. And we had to go back and put editor's notes in several of them. And the one that was the greatest joy for me was when Jim's friend John O'Hara, who was wrongfully convicted by the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office of illegal voting. Jim didn't live long enough to know that John's conviction was overturned. That happened a couple years ago. And that was a great joy to write that editor's note because Jim had a huge role in that happening.
This question I'm going to initially ask Howard, and then I'll ask you as well, Daryl. But as serving as his editor at the Times Union, what was that process like? What was the working relationship between the two of you?
Well, fortunately, Jim and I had a pretty good relationship. People would come in to interviews, and they'd look at us, and, you know, Jim and I looked like polar opposites. But when they got to know us, they would frequently say, hey, you two guys, you think alike. You're one and the same. And
you were a little more clean shaven than him.
Well,
that has been noted.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
But every morning we'd have our meetings, our editorial board meetings, and he and I, along with the other members of the board, which would be the editor at large and the managing editor if he wanted to join us, and the publisher if he wanted to join us, and then we'd talk over the different events of the day, which ones we thought were worthy of comment, which ones really needed comment, and then we would discuss those and try to reach a consensus. Not always easy, but eventually we'd come to some kind of an agreement. If we really didn't feel strongly about the topic, either Jim or I, well, we would just pass it off to the other person to write. But most of the time, 99% of the time, Jim and I were on the same wavelength.
What did he typically want to write about?
Well, social injustice would be number one. He'd be writing about, I'm sure, the political landscape, the national political landscape, especially when we have someone in the White House who's attacking the press. I think Jim would probably say something along these lines. He'd say, well, okay, you want to make America great again. Well, if you have a great America, you need a great leader. And a great leader doesn't attack the free press. He doesn't insult and humiliate those who disagree with him. He doesn't deny his failings or shortcomings. He overcomes them. And he doesn't stir division among our allies. He works cooperatively with them. Something along those lines. And I think it would be kind of on the top of his agenda for a long time until at least 2020.
Yeah. I assume you agree.
I certainly do. I think my husband would be having a field day right now. And when Jim was most distraught about a topic that he was writing on, instead of getting angry or revealing that anger, he got very incisive, very subtle, and I think very scathing at times. Less is more sometimes in this kind of writing, and I think he would have had an incredible influence on these topics.
There is a beautiful section in the book that I'm very glad you included, which is about appreciations that are done, which is really nice because it gives a sense as to how he was thought of by the community as well as his colleagues.
Are you referring to the two pieces by Fred Lebrun and...
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. We had asked a number of people who had worked with Jim to contribute to the book. And what we ended up with were a couple of pieces that we realized were better after people had read the book. And that's why Robert Whitcomb and Fred Lebrun's pieces are at the end of the content. And we made a special section for those. Rex Smith wrote a stunning foreword to the book.
Right.
And really gave a very vivid picture of what Jim was like when he was working up an idea for an editorial. We were fortunate that we had so much to choose from with so many good contributions.
You wrote the obituary that appeared in the Times.
I did. And first of all, my former colleague and friend Steve Barnes wrote a stunning news story, and Jim's death was a news story. I still don't know how he did that because he knew Jim very well. You just turn off your emotions.
Yep.
I got back from our trip to the Cape, which is, of course, where Jim died. And I just felt like I was the only person who could write the obituary that ran in the formal obit section of the Times Union. It's very unusual to have a name attached to the obituary. It, of course, did not run with my byline, but I felt very strongly I wanted people to know that I did that for my husband. And I started working on that at home. It ran about a week after Jim's actual death, but I was the one that knew that background, and I really felt like I was the only person who could do that.
Yeah, and what a beautiful gift, really, for him and for all of us. In the collection, was there What kind of discussions did the two of you have of what would make it in and what worked best to exemplify his work?
Well, that was not an easy task because Jim wrote an awful lot. When you look back at the
thousands, we think thousands. 4,000 to 5,000 pieces in his career.
And I guess we just had to look for material that reflected his best writing, of course, but most of his stuff did. I can't remember any bad pieces. But what would be more timely and what would reflect the different... That's why we divided this into different sections like Albany and politics and everything. What best reflected those sections.
And not just from a statewide or local or regional scope, but a national and even international scope. And that's why we felt that, for example, Jim's gorgeous writing on the September 11th attacks had to go into this book. There were several pieces in the book that we very much wanted to use. They didn't quite fit into the other more newsy topics. They were very personal pieces. Yeah. And those went into the last section of the book, which also bears the title of the book, which comes from something that Jim wrote. It was a proposal for a book that he was hoping to have time to write, which would have been called I'll Be Home, a memoir about growing up in a very working class neighborhood in Boston. So we compiled those last, I think it's 6 or 8 pieces, very personal. Some of them had never been published. 2 of them are essays that were application essays for fellowships. And they just said a lot about Jim's life.
I want to just touch on in the moment or two that we have left of what Howard mentioned earlier about this, you know, the narrative that is often coming from the White House and about the press being enemy of the people. In doing this, do you? I assume all of you. I mean, you're obviously the converted already. You're both journalists, but that you have a great understanding of how important his job was of being an editorial writer and what that means to be good at that job.
And he was excellent at that job. The press is part of our democracy. It's a pillar of our democracy. And to use a tactic that dictators use by calling it the enemy of the people, if that gets widespread acceptance, we're in trouble. And I think Jim would be the first to point out and keep pointing out how we need an objective and fair press, but also one that isn't going to be a mouthpiece for any administration.
Last year, the Boston Globe led a national effort where hundreds, if not, I believe, more than 1,000 newspapers participated on the same day, one day selected last year. There was a national movement where papers all ran editorials explaining why we need to cherish our free press. And on the one hand, that's great that that was done, and I can imagine the piece Jim would have written. On the other hand, it is sickening that we had to do that in this country. I have heard the reporters who are covering the Trump administration in person speak at panels. They've all received death threats. This is a very dangerous profession. People have died in this country covering stories. Mm. They've been attacked. And the fact that we are on now national and international rankings for being a dangerous country to be a journalist in is also sickening, and it has to stop.
The book is just incredible. It's called I'll Be Home. The Writings of Jim McGrath is edited by Daryl McGrath and Howard Healy. I thank you both so much for being with us and sharing this morning. A great pleasure.
It was a great honor to talk about
you for having us.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.